was ushered in with the MCC showing its best pioneering spirit. Two countries new to the test scene were to be visited, New Zealand, who were to play their first ever test matches, and the West Indies embarking on their first home series. While Harold Gilligan took the side to New Zealand, the Honourable Frederick Calthorpe took ship for the Caribbean with a 14-strong team, among them R.E.S. Wyatt.
I very much wanted to go on the New Zealand one, and my captain, a Warwickshire captain, insists I went with him. But I think they were about equal importance. I think possibly the West Indies might have been considered a bit more important. We had more well-known names, I suppose. They were all getting rather old.
Yes, five of the party were over 40, with Andrew Sandham only just behind them at 39, and Wilfred Rhodes and George Gunn were both past 50. Bill Vose was the baby of the party at 20, and the next youngest at 24 was Les Ames.
In those days, one's got to remember that the West Indians weren't quite the force that they have been in recent years. The really only batsman that they had, and even he wasn't really known, no Englishman had played against him, of course, was George Headley. And so, you know, we went there as more, both sides went, the side to New Zealand, the side to the West Indies were really almost second in them.
And what about the local population? In Trinidad, the West Indian writer C.L.R. James was amongst those eagerly awaiting the arrival of an MCC team.
Cricket for us was everything. And the MCC was the head, the organizer, the historic head of cricket. That meant a great deal. We felt that we had at last arrived, that they would come to us and we would be recognized as part of the authorities of the game. That meant a lot.
And it meant a lot, too, that these representatives of cricket's headquarters were being led by someone from the upper strata of English society in Freddie Calthorpe.
He was an English aristocrat. He was in his general behavior and outlook, and that meant a lot to us, more than his... He wasn't obviously a great cricketer.
But he was a charming man, and... No, there's no way he would have got into an England side in England or a full England side abroad.
He's a very good captain, particularly off the field. I wouldn't say he's a particularly good technician or strategist.
Calthorpe may have been the captain, but C.L.R. James has no doubt who the crowds really wanted to see.
Wilfred Rhodes was the one, because he was a great historic figure, and beside which, he was a very friendly personality. He talked to everybody, to the women and the children.
I love the enthusiasm of the spectators. I mean, they didn't miss a thing. They used to point out to the batsmen what the bowlers were doing. Look out for Wilfred Rhodes. He hide the ball. He hide the ball. And that kind of thing.
Well, Rhodes took three Barbados wickets in the opening match, which started on New Year's Day 1930, and featured 223 not out from Patsy Hendren in a drawn game. Incredibly, he did it again in the next game against the island, 211 not out in another draw. Hendren was embarking on a tremendous tour, in which he was to average 126 in all matches and 115 in the four tests. But all the batsmen approved of the pitches.
Magnificent batting wickets. The best batting wickets I've ever seen in my life. That's why I got a few runs, I expect.
Very good wickets to get in on once you got in. You get plenty of runs. But the ball came very quick off the pitch at the start of an innings.
And Bob Wyatt had already amassed scores of 55 and 81 against the island side when the first test started in Barbados. To Clifford Roach fell the honour of being the West Indies' first test centurion. He made 122 and De Caere's 80 in a total of 369, in which Greville Stevens, the Middlesex amateur, with prodigious leg spin and googlies, took five wickets. But then Bob Wyatt saw something that he was to become more familiar with in Australia a couple of years later.
It was the first time that I ever saw what became known as bodyline bowled by Constantine. He bowled at George Gunn and Sandham when they first went in. Exactly what they call bodyline.
He was bowling to what became known as the bodyline field.
Yes, he was.
Were you shocked by that? Was everyone shocked?
Surprised. I wasn't actually playing in the match because Martindale had broken a bone in my foot. And I'd got a couple of good scores in the first matches and then couldn't play in the test match because I got this broken bone. So I didn't have to face any of this. I normally went in number three. But George Gunn, who was a magnificent player of fast bowling throughout his career, walked down the wicket to Constantine and played him with a dead bat. Didn't give him many runs, but he played him very easily, which is much better than Sandham did, actually. But Sandham managed to stay there and got 100.
152, in fact, in an England score of 467, of which Hendren made 80. But C.L.R. James disagrees with Bob Wyatt about the bowling tactics that brought Constantine three wickets.
Constantine never bowled bodyline. Constantine would bowl a short ball on the batsman's body. But bodyline in the sense of attacking and making the batsman feel that if he didn't play the ball, he could be hit. That was foreign not only to Constantine's play, but to his mentality. He had a great respect for the game, the traditions, and the future of cricket, and he would never have done anything which might harm what the play or what people thought of it. And I believe he was, in many essential respects, the most remarkable cricketer who ever played at a time when cricket was what it became. A personality of remarkable style.
And nobody disagrees about his fielding ability.
I suppose he was the greatest all-round fielder of all time. Well, when I say all-round, I mean he could field anywhere. He's as good in the slips as he was a short leg and so on, and a very accurate thrower. He was a very overrated batsman, in my opinion. I mean, every now and again he played a brilliant innings, but not very often.
There were batsmen who were in and out beside him, but of in and out batsmen, none was so consistent as Constantine was. He remained an explosive cricketer whom you never knew, and the bowlers and his opposite captain didn't know, but he wasn't erratic. He scored fairly regularly for the kind of explosive cricket that he played.
C.L.R. James on Leary Constantine, later Sir Leary, and then Baron Constantine of Maraval and Nelson. But he wasn't the only star in this West Indies team, and when they batted again, 98 runs behind, England came up against another, George Headley.
It was the first time I'd ever seen him, of course. I'd never seen him. He'd never been over to this country then. None of the MCC team had ever seen George Headley. But it was obvious right from the word go that he was a very fine player indeed. And he looked in a different class completely to any of the other West Indian batsmen.
He was known, you know, as the second Bradman, the Black Bradman. He was about the best player they ever had, I should imagine, was part of Sobers now. I think that Sobers is the only one that was really, really better than he was. He had a wonderful record.
There was nobody superior to Headley. It was difficult for us to say so about this Black West Indian coming from backward Jamaica, but we felt that he was the kind of batsman to whom nobody was superior. That's what we thought about George Headley. He took us into the front ranks of cricket.
He was so good in back play and forward play. He was mainly a back player, and he was a fine player against all types of bowling. You couldn't really fault him. And on top of that, a very nice little man.
In this, his first test, he made 176 in the second innings to ensure a draw, despite Stephen's second five-wicket haul of the match. Roach and Decares, the big scorers of the first innings, again made runs, and in reply, Sandham had time for 50 more. And so the party sailed south to Trinidad,